This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
So why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Winslow's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, wasn't it? Bismarck, wasn't that his
name? Lizmark.
Lizmark. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hear us. Shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
our
favorite. Opener.
To do worse than Josh Richer.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to another great episode of the One Only Place to Be Podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live here on this Monday evening. And we are back inside the Vintage Vault, as usual, on our Mondays. And we've survived the hurricane. We're all here and happy, healthy, and hopefully disease-free. I'll check with my PAC momentarily to see how he survived the long weekend. But hopefully everyone had a great Independence Day weekend. It's always cool when it lands on a Friday, so everyone's pretty much, if you're working a normal job anyway, you have the weekend off, but for those that had to work, hopefully you made good money. So let me bring in my PIC, Mr. Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 322 of the Place to Be Podcast. And it was a fun extended 4th of July weekend. I hope everyone enjoyed it that observes Independence Day. Went to some fireworks and out in New York on Friday night. I was actually at a minor league game of your favorite franchise, JR, the Staten Island Yankees. And mm-hmm. they have fireworks after their game. And then their outfield, I mean, right outside their ballpark is the East River. That's, you know, Staten Island Ferry's right next door. And you could see the Manhattan fireworks. So it was really awesome.
Did you say hi to Josh Richer while you were there?
I didn't realize Josh was home. I did not take into account. I figured he'd have gone home for the weekend. I wish I had known. I would love for him to.
You could at least have just checked in and said hi.
I checked. You. I know. I feel terrible. I do feel terrible.
Awful person.
Could have walked around with his kilt on. I had a feeling you were going to give me shit for that today. We're definitely going to go to future Staten Island Yankee games. But the rest of the weekend was fairly uneventful. You had a very festive weekend, I noticed.
Yeah. Sister had a surprise wedding yesterday. It was supposed to be a...
Never thought that would ever actually happen.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was supposed to be a 35th birthday party for her fiancé, but everyone got there, and they came out. We all said surprise, and they said, no, the jig's up. It's on you. You're at a wedding. So they want to get ready. The jig was on my sister as well, though, because my mom had told us, because she wanted my daughter to be the flower girl, so we had to get that prepared. So we pulled the oop-de-oop on my sister, who was pulling the oop-de-oop on everyone else. So a lot of chicanery and trickery over the last few weeks.
That's funny.
Heading into this event. But they had put on an awesome party. They had a DJ, a dance floor, an open bar with official bartenders. They had it all catered. So we went swimming, played some cornhole, danced. Your boy got pretty lit, so that was fun.
I could tell.
I
have to applaud you. The videos of Juliana dancing... We're very sturdy. So.
Well, I put on a good. This one I'm hoping from St. Mary's. I had a real steady buzz from about 1 o'clock through about 9:30. It was I maintained it well. The guy was making very strong Jack and Gingers for me, so I was drinking that all day. And at the end, when the bartenders left, my now brother-in-law has a kegerator of Yingling, So we were tapping that. So I had a couple of those.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah. Ugh. So that was a good way to cap off the evening. But it was a lot of fun. We had a very good time. They're very happy. So very cool. Very cool 4th of July.
Yes.
And excellent. Then I partied in the day before. Partied in Newport with the coach of men's basketball, Maine men's basketball.
Yeah, you made Andrew Reich's day.
Made him blush.
Very funny. So There you go. It's a nice long weekend. And here we are inside the Big Silver Box. I wonder if he at least left the building this weekend. I'd like to think so.
Oh, hey, what is going on here?
You know, every day I have to listen to our good friend Stephen Sutton complain about you. I would like to think at some point you're going to take, you know, a week off, or I'm sure you'll take off when the rest of us do. So anyway, tonight in the Vintage Vault on the Place to Be podcast, we bridge eras from one to another. We're not playing the open. We could sing it. The end is here. All right.
Pretty classy. Was still kicking around in that one.
Yeah. Did that debut the Armageddon song? I don't think it debuted in 2000, right? Was it there in 2000? Probably was.
They used it in 99. I feel like they've definitely used it before.
Okay. All right.
No, they used it for Survivor Series, didn't they? Last year, The Invasion?
Yes, you're correct.
Definitely used it for the end of the
invasion. So it's definitely. I think you're right, though. I think it may go back to 99,
yeah,
possibly. If not, definitely 2000 for the cell. Anyway,
well, well, 2000 they used Sweet Home Alabama, but I think
that's right, Sweet Home Alabama, because it was in. That's right. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault on the Place to Be podcast, we end the calendar year with Armageddon 2002. Do you consider this a forgotten show in some ways?
Yeah, because I mean, forgot it for me as well. This is kind of a dark age of pay-per-view. We've talked about it before. Even though I went to Survivor Series, these next, I don't know, 10 to 12, was just during a time that I didn't watch a lot of the pay-per-views. I was watching TV regularly, so this is one I've seen very few times. So it was cool rewatching it the other day. Mm-hmm. And I would agree with that. I would say it's a little under the radar for a show.
Okay.
Most December shows I find to be, unless there's a match that really sticks out in someone's mind, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I would think, well, let's see, if you date back to 95, I mean, pretty much the real only memorable, I guess, would be...
01.
Yeah, 01.
I'd say 2000 with the cell.
A little bit. The undercard.
There's always been at least one match.
Yeah.
That's,
I mean, even
out
back to 95, the incredible right. Brett Bulldog match. So.
But I would say going forward, they become pretty forgettable. At
yeah,
least in my hindsight memory,
probably
looking
till,
back now without watching
yeah,
them.
Yeah, probably till like 2011, Punk's first title defense.
Yeah.
After that, though, yeah, they're probably pretty lame, but
all
of
right
course we'll go through
why
them.
Why don't we hit all the right roll call for Mr. Sutton here?
All right, before we get in the open, go ahead.
Yes, and now we're getting, of course, sponsored by Lugs. Remember
Lugs
them back from the Attitude Era.
Oh,
back.
Jesus. Sponsored like every pay-per-view for 3 years.
Okay, our champions, we have our WWE champion, The Big Show, mm-hmm, our world champion, Shawn Michaels, world tag team champions, Chris Jericho and Christian, tag team champions, Los Guerreros, mm-hmm, cruiserweight champion, Billy Kidman, and women's champion, Victoria. So, Scott, for the first time in a while, we've had no title changes from pay-per-view to pay-per-view.
That's right. Well, that's because we had five title changes at Survivor Series, so
yes,
would have been really bad to have any of those change in between.
We had a couple of transfers. We had the big Valboski went from SmackDown to Raw,
mm-hmm,
and Scott Steiner signed to Raw as well from free agency.
Yes.
A couple TV milestones we should mention. Velocity passed its 30th episode. TNA weekly pay-per-views are now past 25.
Okay. You said, I appreciate, I think Stephen Sutton appreciates you saying that with such a Velocity past 30 episodes.
A lot of gusto. Well, he yes puts the work in. I want to make sure he gets payment for it.
Yes. No, it was. Velocity didn't have a lot of memorable matches yet. 03 and 04, they'd have a, you know, maybe two or three that people talk about, but so far it's pretty much just, you
let's
know,
give
hold
them up, something to talk about. Do you know what was released during this time period, Scott?
I do. It was Anthology.
Yes. Do you know how many tracks were on this 3-CD set?
I should know off the top of my head because I've listened to it in my car for the last week. I would say 26, 35, about 70?
86 tracks.
Wow.
Yep.
I know disc 2 has like 37 or something. It's like a crazy number.
It was released 3 days after Survivor Series. On December 16th, was recognized as the best-selling album by WWE as it went gold and platinum. by the RIAA. Disc 3 actually had 19 tracks. As You Can Run, Billy Kidman's theme was available on the website with a special code. It was released on CD 2 years later on a different version. So, Anthology, of course, just had all different themes from across the history of the promotion. The first disc had a lot of 80s to early 90s. The second disc was like all Attitude Era. And then disc 3 was more of the modern stuff from like 2000 on.
Yeah, disc 1 had... Well, if you figure... I know disc 3 had 16 tracks. It didn't have a lot. So, 87. So, the
19.
Other two... 19.
Steven just said it.
So, yeah. Disc 2 had the most. I think disc 2 had like 36 tracks.
Yeah,
I think
it had all the Attitude stuff.
Like 27 or 28.
And it was but a godsend at a time where you couldn't just hop on YouTube yet, and you couldn't... Yep. Yeah, you could download them, but sometimes you'd get crappy versions, and... You could try and find it, or you'd end up getting a fake file. It was so cool to have all those old 80s and 90s themes in your hands in perfect quality.
Right. Well, this was the era, you know, me working in radio at the time, this was the era where, you know, Kazaa and LimeWire and all those, and some versions, well, Kazaa almost corrupted our entire song system at our radio station. Somebody downloaded Kazaa. LimeWire was a pretty reliable one, though.
Yeah, I feel like LimeWire was a little bit later, wasn't it? Or was it just starting? Because Napster was still around in 02, wasn't it?
Yes, Napster was still around. What's his name? Didn't sell to anybody yet. But I remember using LimeWire in 02. So maybe it was mid to late 02. But yeah. I remember 2000, 2001, it was either Napster or Kazaa.
Yeah.
Were pretty much the two main. But Kazaa was just a freaking malware nightmare.
Well, that, yeah, they all were. I mean, you had to really be careful and pick your spots. But
yeah,
it was really cool having all of a sudden this plethora of music via these CDs. So
yeah, no, it was a smart move by WWE. Mm-hmm. To do that. So, all right. December 15th, 2002. Live from the Office Depot Center in, it says Fort Lauderdale, Florida, but technically it's the suburb of Sunrise, actually where our man Dr. G grew up, right in the backyard in Sunrise, right near the Sawgrass Mall. We have a little history. It's the first time we've been in this building, JR. Tell us the history of the ODC.
Oh, baby. So, this was opened October 3rd, 1998 in Broward County. They own it. Structural engineer Walter P. Moore and Associates. Capacity for basketball 20,737. Center stage concerts 22,457. So what did you say the attendance here was? 9,000.
I didn't say it yet. 9,000. Oh,
so
9,
we are quite short of a sellout here at the end of 02.
Yes. Did you say what hockey? Did you have a hockey number?
Hockey is 19,250.
Okay.
Short of a sellout. Tenants, your Florida Panthers still play there to this day. Mm-hmm. The Florida Pit Bulls played there from 05 to 06. The Florida Bobcats of the AFL played there from 99 to 2001. The Florida Thundercats, Scott, of course, from the, I would assume, from the cartoon, played there.
I would think so.
For a year. The Miami Caliente of the LFL. And we know them very well. The Lingerie Football League played there for you. We've met a lot of lingerie teams.
I thought that for a minute, and I was going to say the Latin Football League. The Calientes.
We've been introduced to a lot of the Lingerie Football League.
I think we've covered every division.
Do you know who the Florida Pitbulls are, Scott? The ABA. But not the original one. It was the modern one.
I didn't realize there was a modern ABA.
That's started in 2000 to the present. It's still going. Well, the Pitbulls only played for a year. Everybody knows this right here. Of course, this guy, I'm assuming, was on the team. That's why they were named.
Yes, of course. And he was passing out Bud Light and Dr. Pepper.
Yes. Watch the NBA Finals!
God, what a hump. Absolutely can't stand him. All right, so there you go. So the Office Depot Center. God, Jesus. I'm trying to remember what the previous... It was a few... It wasn't always Office Depot Center. It was like National Car Rental Center, I think it was at one point. It was a few places.
Yeah,
there's a few things.
So we haven't been here. Were we in here from one of those other December shows?
I don't think so.
I think we've talked about the National Car Rental Center.
Maybe it was in 99. Let me double check. Usually it'll mention pay-per-views on the wiki page.
Yeah, I think we've been here before.
Let me check 99.
I remember talking about the National Car Rental Center.
All right, let's check. It wasn't 2000. It wasn't 01.
All right, so while you're doing that, I will go through the Heat matches. So on your standard international Heat, we had Hurricane defeated Raven, Test defeated an unknown soldier, Spike Dudley defeated Johnny Stamboli, and Tommy Dreamer defeated Sean O'Hare. Armageddon Heat, the official pay-per-view version, Jeff Hardy defeated D'Lo Brown.
Okay. You're correct. I'm sorry. My apologies. Armageddon 99 was at the NCR Center.
Yep.
Now, how about this? What a difference 3 years makes. The attendance for that one was 15,749.
Yeah, so kind of a dying area here.
Yeah, so.
So I wonder, we'll be curious if they go back there. We'll have to keep an eye out.
Mm. As mentioned, your announcers, of course, for Raw, good old JR Jim Ross, Jerry the King Lawler out in the bowels of the arena and right at ringside, Michael Cole and Taz doing your SmackDown matches.
And we have a lot of cool facts from Steven that we'll get to at the end of the show. Kind of year mm-hmm. review type stuff. So
okay.
We'll tease that now. We'll get to it as we move along.
Okay. All right. Let's open with our first title match of the evening.
Did you like the set? I thought it was pretty cool.
Oh, with all the fire? Yeah, yeah. It was very cool. Yeah,
they always did a good job at the end of the year making it feel like it's the end of the world.
Yeah, I know. And what I'm going to mention when we get to the last match, I want to laugh about the kind of fire hazard that took place during the tournament event that I thought was pretty funny. So, any event. All right, let's open our first match. Title match, JR,
mm-hmm.
on the Raw side. We'll have to start specifying this now. On the Raw brand, the World Tag Team Championships, otherwise known as the Red Belts, on the line here. Your champions, as JR mentioned, Chris Jericho and Christian, taking on three teams in a elimination four-way match. Your other teams, the newly reunited Dudley Boys, of course, D-Von back on Raw, came back at Survivor Series to help his boy Bubba Ray. So they're together again. The lovable team that this may be the end of the line if they don't win it here, and that's, of course, Booker T and... Very good. You always ask me every vault, and I would have to say, finally, I think this is the end of the line.
Yeah.
I don't think they win here, I think
no,
it's...
No, they need to win here.
They need to win this one. And this newly slapped together team that's actually... We're actually pretty good on TV, JR.
Yeah.
The team of Lance Storm, who we hadn't seen since the breakup of the Un-American. So on pay-per-view, we haven't seen him since, what, Unforgiven?
Mm-hmm.
And William Regal, who had just joined the Un-Americans. He's always too late. He's always a day late and a dollar short. He joins the Alliance... 4 weeks before they fold, and then here he joins the Un-Americans like a week before they fold.
Well, it's funny, like these two and then Christian and Jericho, I feel like they're in this weird incestuous tag team relationship. They
yes.
just keep kind of swapping partners in and out throughout the year here.
Yes.
So now we settle on these two, and they've been quite a role, like you mentioned, Scott, being pushed really hard leading up to the show, and JR even mentions they were riding a 6-match win streak heading in.
Mm.
A WCF Vince Rotten-esque win streak.
That's heading right.
into the show. 6 matches.
That's right.
To yes. get this title shot. Yep. One of the main plot points in this match, and you mentioned it's their last chance, Goldust showing a supreme lack of confidence. He had been the reason his team had taken some losses, and he started doubting himself and claimed he was the weak link. On the 12-9 Raw, Storm and Regal defeated Booker and Goldust, and Goldust told Booker he would best be served to go find a new partner for Armageddon. Booker got Goldust's confidence back and assured him he was no weak link and that he was his partner of choice. Lawler would spend most of this match harping on that weak link angle. So, new Dudley theme, Scott, if you notice.
Yes,
the Bombshell.
By, was that P.O.D.?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think it's P.O.D. Get up, drop the bombshell. I actually like that, and they didn't use it long enough.
No, they have it for a while, don't they?
I don't know. I thought they went back to something else, because the usual, I don't feel like paying the royalties thing. Maybe they use it through...
We'll have to see. I feel like they have it for a while.
Yeah, I thought they got rid of it, like, in April. Well, you might be right. They might have gone a little bit. I was just assuming that, you know, the usual...
Mm.
Not paying that NAFTA and BMI rights or ASCAP and BMI rights or whatever, but I liked it. I like the POD version.
Well, they're reunited, fired yep. up his faces, and I thought that definitely felt refreshed. Now
we should have played Reunited, but we're reunited. It would have been funny.
Well, they definitely feel so good because
yes.
they definitely feel refreshed. It would made sense to put them back together. They have the new song, kind mm-hmm. of a newer look. Bubba's kept the shorts, so yep. Storm back with another team. Good spot for Regal. Needed something new as well. Booked Dust very over still. This is the point now. They have to pull the trigger, especially with the story in place. I yep. thought Christian and Jericho had a good swagger and with a team look. And the tag division on Raw kind of sneaky got pretty strong quickly. If you look at these four teams, they're all pretty good.
Yes, they are very good. And we've talked over the last few shows about tag, you know, two singles guys slapped together. But in this case, not too bad because, I mean, really, what else is Regal and, I mean, European belts
no,
gone.
No, I thought it was a great idea.
Yeah.
And with and you made a good point, the European title, because We have no IC title anymore, no European title. So, yeah, we should be making the tag division strong. And I feel like this is really an overlooked time period in the overall company and tag teams. So we have the SmackDown 6, and now we have the Raw 8 here with the four very good teams in the mix. Mm. So I think it's kind of an underrated period of tag teams in the company.
Definitely.
JR notes all the title changes in Survivor Series. Remember, I harkened back to our review with you when you noted that title change like in every match or whatever. Mm. So. JR pointed out the same thing. Dudleys were hot early, running through everyone. The crowd seemed pretty happy to have them back. A real nice mix of talent, I thought. Nice work, Goldust and Regal. And I thought that could have been a cool little TV feud if they had had a couple singles matches. Kind of only get like a taste of it here. Right. Goldust has super smooth offense. They do a cool double flip-flop and fly with with Bubba and Goldust. I think we saw that back at Unforgiven as well in that 8-man. All the faces dominate until a 3D on Storm breaks up the pin. The Dudleys hit a 3D, Storm breaks up the pin and eliminates the Dudleys. It was kind of a confusing pin, though. The ref counts, and they all kind of stand around looking at each other.
Yeah, it was really weird. Yeah.
JR seems confused, and then Goldust quickly takes out Regal, and that was confusing, too. And they just kind of go. So now we're back down to Booker and Goldust against Christian and Jericho. And before we get to the rest of this match, Scott, do you think they should have just had this as a singles, just a regular tag?
Yeah, I think...
Or are you okay that you kind of get the other teams on... But these two teams still get, they still get 10 minutes to go on their own because the first two teams went out in 5.5 minutes and the whole match is 16:43. So, they basically have a whole other match, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we only had 7 matches, although the last match takes quite a bit of time. But still, no, I have no problem with it. I think for the reason, you know, two singles titles are gone.
Right.
So you really need to be. You really need to showcase.
Well, would you rather have had two tag matches?
Oh, two single tag matches.
So you have Regal and Storm go over the Dudleys to kind of.
Maybe. I guess because that you didn't have any Raw tags at Survivor Series. Mm. So probably not that big a deal.
I feel like maybe you hurt both of those scenes by having them both lose. I mean, you could have done the old, you know, WrestleMania 13, old Survivor Series style, just do like a double count out with those four guys.
Yeah, just let them keep them all strong. Beat the snot out of each other, yeah.
Instead of doing this weird rapid fire. Man, I guess that is kind of the modern day double count out, just a quick roll up kind of
thing.
Well,
that's true. You're eating a pin without eating a pin or whatever, so that's entirely possible.
So they go out, good Booker and Goldust teamwork. Christian Jericho got very little offense for a while here. They finally take control, slow it down. They work over Goldust. Booker was pretty locked in. The crowd loves him. Good offense. He gets a really nice sunset flip roll up out of the corner move. Was really, really smooth. Booker and Goldust keep thwarting cheating. And it was good that these teams got a lot of time, like we mentioned, because this has really been the main feud. A really good near fall and a scissor kick by Booker. Jericho uses the belt and gets a lion's haul for a great near fall, which I thought was it. And that might be it for Booker and Goldust. But a bookend finishes for Booker. Now, it was very fitting that he got the pin after all this. They finally win. You had to do it here. It was not too late, but we were getting close, like you mentioned at the beginning of this. Huge pop. Very fun match, and Booker's faith in Goldust pays off. They do a promo later after the match, and Goldust is emotional about how he's not the weak link. And it's been a great story watching these two come together. Mm. And I will say this, rewatching this has retaught me that they did not wait too long. Because I really thought they had for a while. Until I rewatched the show last week. Or since we've been rewatching all these shows. For years, I always thought they waited too long, and it killed the pop. But it didn't. The crowd was still into it, and it still was a cool moment.
Yeah, I agree. No, I had faith in it all along that the moment had come. Although I will say that this was the opportune time. If you didn't do it here, I don't know what kind of match you could have created that would have made it look any better for them. But Booker was still scorching hot. And I think I don't think it was just... I don't think that at this point that Goldust was riding like a wave and it was a coattails thing. I think fans genuinely liked Goldust on this team, and I think fans liked their work together. So I was happy to see them win, and Booker was, I'd like to think, lined up for something bigger, and this was just kind of a holdover for a couple months. I don't think that's a big problem, but there you have it. Booker T and Goldust, finally World Tag Team Champions. Very fitting, and good match.
Yeah,
good match. Nothing crazy, but good match and a good chase that finally culminated in a good start to the show. Good start to the show. Do we have anything backstage yet? I know there's we go backstage a lot. So what do we got here?
We do. Brock is in the building. Suspension's been lifted, and they're teasing that he'll be in Kurt Angle's corner. Mm-hmm. Brock vows he will make an impact, but does not say how, where, why, with who, when.
And we'll get to, when we get to that match later, we'll explain what the suspension was and what the deal was and all that. So, all right, next up, we have a straight-up singles match here, siphoning off of his SmackDown 6 series of tag matches. Edge.
Taking on his least favorite wrestler.
Yeah, exactly. No respect. Taking on A-Train, Kevin Kelly's favorite wrestler.
The former Albert.
Former Albert. Why was he A-Train? Remember, he was also Hip Hop Hippo.
Yes.
With Scotty Too Hotty.
A-Train had faced Rey Mysterio on the 12-5 SmackDown, lost by DQ, and he beat Rey's leg with a steel chair. Rey's partner Edge came out to help him on the stretcher to the ambulance, but later in that night, Edge was coming to the ring for a fatal four-way number one contender match, and A-Train attacked him with a chair in the leg as well. Edge limped out and fought valiantly, but had to tap in the match due to the injury. Many rumors at this time, Scott, that Matt Hardy was supposed to get this feud with Edge. Matt Hardy version 1, if you remember, we talked about a Survivor Series, but things were switched up at the last minute to give A-Train a push. Hardy was supposed to be the one to take out Rey and lay the groundwork for a future feud, but the creative team decided to use the feud to elevate A-Train instead, and that ruffled some feathers on the old internet message boards back in the day.
Oh, of course.
So A-Train is a new name for Albert, trying to reestablish him as a heel after he spent most of the year, like you said, being the hip-hop goofball. Reestablishing him as a beast, he destroyed Rey, put him on the shelf with a knee injury. Did you feel like this felt like a step backwards for Edge?
I gotta be honest, I do. He had been progressing so well throughout the year, had great feuds, was with Rey as a tag team. We had some, obviously, some tremendous matches on SmackDown and on pay-per-view. And then it's like, all right, now we're gonna face this guy who was nothing more than, you know, fodder for most of 2002. So I do, and this is not a knock on. I mean, I like A-Train. He's a good, you know, good serviceable big guy, but I feel like Edge did kind of take a step back here in a kind of a forgotten match, maybe just to get him on the show. I didn't realize Art O'Donnell liked a guy named Edge. Edge of what? So I do think, I mean, again, I don't want to insult, I don't want to knock Albert or A-Train because, you know, he's a good, again, a good serviceable big man. But considering the matches that Edge has had throughout 2002 from Kurt, you know, from Regal, I mean, think of his opponents throughout 2002. You had Regal and Booker and Kurt, and then he was teaming with Hogan and they were tag champs, and then the Un-Americans, and then Eddie, and then the tag thing. I mean, just really red hot upper mid card stuff. And now he's facing A-Train. In a forgotten undercard to begin with on this show, forgotten even
the
more.
I feel like the only reason it works is it's a chance for him to carry a guy for the first time since this whole thing started. Right.
Good point. Yeah. Sure.
Because remember, we've talked about.
I mean, I just listed great guys too. I mean, it kind of makes sense.
All the guys he's worked with. We've talked about this the whole year. How he's been getting master's classes with all those guys, and now we're going to see if he can do it. You know, has he just been riding the coattails, or has he been carrying his end of the bargain all this time? That's what we need to find out. So a good test here. Albert, or A-Train, attacks Edge's knee with a chair, too, and Edge is wrestling here with a torn MCL. A lot of brawling early. Albert, I'm going to keep calling him Albert, tries to overpower.
I'm trying not to either.
Edge starts to work over the shoulder. Edge has been working on breaking him down. Hasn't been working against bigger opponents lately, so a new strategy out of him with his offense. Basic offense from A-Train, good fire from Edge. Edge gets a weird pin attempt and pulls up. this is a weird spot. He pulls up A-Train's tights and pretty much almost exposes his Prince Albert. He's like sitting near his head and like pulls the bottom of his tights up. It was really odd.
Yeah, it was very weird.
Lost my spot here. So A-Train catches Edge with a bicycle kick as Edge comes off the top. He tries to use a chair, which leads to a spare and a near fall. A-Train bashes Edge's knee with a chair for a DQ. I thought I was all right with the shit finish here to keep A-Train strong. Better match than I expected. I thought Edge actually did a decent job, and A-Train executed all his moves. The only downside is Edge didn't sell his knee too much.
Which I noticed that, too.
He's supposed to wrestle with a torn MCL, and he's walking around okay. And then Edge gets a sick chair shot to the head when he snaps after the match and starts bashing A-Train in the leg after the bell. So get some revenge for Rey. Did you think this match is better than you expected? Did Edge pass his test carrying a guy like this?
A little bit. I mean, you know, again, A-Train's not chopped liver, so it's not like he's dealing with, you know, some useless hump per se, but I thought he did fine. It wasn't, you know, like Brett carrying Bulldog at SummerSlam 92 or anything, but it was serviceable. I still think that he was, I don't say demoted, but I don't know. I wish he could have faced a more serviceable big man, somebody a little higher on the chain. But it was a good match for what it was. I'm not saying that Edge is in a slump or anything, or he was demoted or punished or anything. I just, you know, it's good, but it's not great.
Right.
But he did a fine job. I wouldn't say he did a crappy job.
He didn't fail.
No, he didn't fail. He got like a C+.
Okay.
He still has some work to do to carry, in my opinion. But still good, though.
Well, we go backstage again where Big Show wants to confront Stephanie, but Heyman tries to talk him out of it. Show wants respect and bitch about Brock Lesnar being around. Paul begs him not to. Says they did this before and everything went awry because Big Show went in there and Steph thought they were trying to intimidate her. And Heyman said he should have went on his own. And he says he'll go again on his own. He wants to leave Show in the back so Stephanie does not get pissed off and do anything stupid.
Right.
Yet again.
Okay. Next up, clearly one of the gems of this show.
Yes,
again.
Very hidden gem.
Quite
a forgotten match.
What a match. Chris Benoit taking on Eddie Guerrero. Eddie, of course, one half of the WWE Tag Team Champions, a.k.a. the Blue Belts, with his nephew Chavo. Benoit, fresh off his kind of tenuous run with Kurt Angle as his tag partner. They're finally done, both doing, you know, their own things. But obviously, this doesn't just start from the tag team feuds. Benoit's a little more pissed off about something else. What is that, JR?
He's pissed off about life, Scott, and part of that... very angry man. Part of that was on the 12-9 SmackDown, Benoit and Guerrero joined with Kurt Angle and Edge in a fatal four-way match to determine the number one contender to challenge Big Show at this show. Benoit recently refocused himself on trying to capture the world title, and his journey began with that match. Benoit would eliminate Guerrero 5.5 minutes into the match, but Eddie hung around ringside and cost Benoit when he hit him with his tag belt. They were given a chance to get their aggressions out here and also to maybe steal the show.
Mm.
So this is a great choice. They haven't really faced off yet in a WWE ring, have they? I don't think
singles?
So.
I don't think so.
Maybe on TV they might have had a match here or there, but I don't think on pay-per-view they've had a single.
No, I mean, they didn't work together in 2001. I don't really remember them working together even in 2000.
Yeah.
Against each other, so maybe in the fall.
Yeah, I mean they may have on TV.
They definitely probably wrestled on SmackDown or even Raw, but I don't think they ever worked one to one on pay per view. So this is a big spot here.
Yep, and they pretty much position it as an unofficial number one contender match as well.
Yes,
they say whoever wins this will probably be in line for a title match. And Cole tells a history of the two guys, which I thought was neat too. Their mm-hmm. background together.
Yep.
Stiff strikes early, and it feels pretty intense with the stare downs, and they're trying to, they not only feel each other out because they know each other so well, but figure out a way to find an opening somewhere. Some mat work early, trading off holds. Great spot with Benoit lifting out of a short arm scissors and slamming Eddie Bob Backlund style, which I think it was Cole called out, actually.
Yes, he did.
Kind of a neat call out. Crowd chants boring, and I like this crowd until this moment. That was kind of stupid of them. Not respecting the slow buildup. Benoit gets dumped to the floor. Eddie starts to work the leg. Benoit comes back with Germans. Eddie cuts that off and hits Germans as well. Everything was really crisp by these two. A lot of snap movements. Great near fall with a frog splash. And they're building up Benoit's character and attitude in the ring. You could tell they were setting him up for something because they kept mentioning how he wasn't giving up and he has his attitude of never say never tap. And
I know what you were going to say.
Chavo interferes, uses the belt. Benoit still kicks out. Benoit comes back with more chops to wreck Eddie and then hits a nasty powerbomb. Benoit fights off Chavo some more, leads to Eddie and Eddie opening. Benoit shoves Eddie to the mat and hits the headbutt, but Eddie turns it into the lasso from El Paso. Benoit slips free of that and fights into the crossface of the wind, which I enjoyed a lot because he kept just bashing him and he switched arms and really locked him in. And got the win. This is a super match. It was a great finish. A really strong showing for Benoit and a very, very hidden classic that even the crowd got into after the early... when they were shitting on it early on, saying it was boring. But where does this one kind of rank so far in the Benoit catalog and his run to this point for you?
I think it's fairly high, I think, for that reason. I love, before I get into Benoit, I loved when Eddie used the lasso from El Paso, and I feel like he stopped using it as a consistent part of his repertoire, particularly by the – I guess he would keep it by the middle of 03, but then when he would go back through the singles run in the late 03 into, of course, 04, I feel like he didn't use it as much anymore. Seeing it here, I liked. As for Benoit, this is definitely one you have to watch again and really, really watch. I think it's no worse than any of his matches with Kurt, and him and Kurt were pure gold. And I don't think this match is that far below it. Is it a notch below? Yeah, probably. only because, like we've said, I don't think Benoit and Eddie worked a lot together to this point.
Right.
Whereas, as you know, I mean, Kurt and Benoit worked, what, 7 pay-per-view matches over 2 years or whatever. So they, you know, or a year and a half. So they, I mean, they know each other very well. So knowing that they really hadn't faced each other together since, Jesus, you know, probably their WCW days. I don't even know if they fought each other that much then. So it was amazing just to see these two slide in and put on a stellar match. I mean, I have about 3.5. You had it as a 4 on our written review.
I
may think of amping it up a half grade. We'll see.
And what a luxury to have, though, at this time in your company when you can just say, all right, let's get these guys out there. Remind me a lot of the WCW days when they had that deep roster, when they could just throw a match out like this on TV. And this actually had some build, too, so it wasn't like some of the other ones we'll see in future years where they say, oh, shit, we got to fill a spot. Yeah, put these two guys out there, let them go
at
it. This actually had some story behind it, which was cool to see. But a real luxury that they could know that they can at least have 1 4-plus star match a show, because they could always throw something like this with this combination of guys just out there and try and just eat up some time and put on a great match.
Yeah, I agree. It's a fantastic match. Highly recommend it. Go on the network, which, by the way, is free this week.
Mm-hmm.
You sign up. And you don't have it yet. Go to the Armageddon. Now, again, like with all the Benoit matches, you got to kind of dig for it because they don't point it out to you on the little timeline. Although, if you know Benoit's on a show and you see a really long gap on the timeline without any dots, that usually means there's a Benoit match in there. So it's in the first half of the thing. Just look it up. Try and find it, and you won't be disappointed. It's definitely one of his hidden gems. But for both guys, him and Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, would we have thought 1 year earlier how great Eddie would become again?
Oh, definitely not. I mean, he wasn't even around a year earlier.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, he was toiling the indies, shaking off pills, and Lord knows what else. And
he's been one of the MVPs easily of 2002.
Yeah. Yep. Definitely a guy that Heyman was happy to have in his camp.
And one great thing about it, too, so far, and we'll talk about this probably at the end of the show, but how surprisingly great the roster has been. Because you always look back and you always think 2000 was a loaded year and 01 had the invasion. And, like, 02 always seems like such a wacky year with so much stuff happening that you almost overlook how much great actual in-ring action there was and how deep the talent ran. And just think of all the great matches we've seen this year so far with Eddie and RVD, and now this Eddie and Benoit, the SmackDown 6. There's been so much good stuff in and out. And even non-work rate-wise, Hogan, Rock, just so many big matches that have been a lot of fun. Kurt and Ray at SummerSlam, Rock and Brock, Michaels and Triple H. There's been so much good stuff littered throughout this year that you just forget about. The Hell in the Cell. I mean, really big-time matches. Rock and Jericho at the Rumble. So much good stuff in ring throughout this year.
Yep. Yep. Heyman was very lucky to have that group on SmackDown.
Well, even just the company as a whole.
Yeah.
And it's just been filled with great matches so far.
Yep,
throughout
I agree.
The year. A lot of great talent, so it's been cool.
Even
amidst all the train wreck of the NWO and everything else.
Well, yeah. They I feel like they shook that off.
Well, things really got good.
By the end of summer.
Yeah.
You know.
That's when I think when they finally settled into what the brands were going to be in September, and they split the belts, and everyone got their own identity. That's, to me, is when this year really got really good. I think it was a good first half, too. But to me, the year got really good, the back end, when they solidified what they wanted. They didn't have a million guys jumping around. We know the two power figures now. We have Stephanie. We have Bischoff. Both are really good characters right now on TV. So it's been good. And the commentary teams, you know, despite King holding down JR, JR's still doing a pretty good job. And on SmackDown, Cole and Taz have been fantastic. So it's been really, really good. Just overall, a lot of the background parts of everything. So,
and I think a lot of that has to do with one return, and we'll talk about this guy later. I think one guy returning just brought an extra boost of energy to the roster in terms of in-ring, and we'll talk about that guy later on. All right.
Well, we got to go backstage again where Heyman tries to kiss up to Stephanie, but Steph won't bend. She says Brock's suspension has been lifted, and they have a cute little back and forth for a few minutes that kind of goes nowhere, and Heyman vows Big Show will break Brock Lesnar's neck.
Mm-hmm. All right. One of the underlying storylines on SmackDown that has been pretty awesome and pretty putrid all at the same time.
Yeah,
has been the triangle of Tori Wilson,
her, yes,
Dawn Marie, and that pile of nothing. Tori's father, Al,
and Scott. I think there's only two words that sum up what we're about to see.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Dawn and Tori. Feud's still going. Dawn and Al are now engaged. But Dawn teased that she's interested in Tori, too.
What?
And she says she won't marry Al if Tori gets it on with her.
What?
And this is all pretty stupid, but it was fucking hot. Dawn
backs
out.
Shit if it was stupid. That's what most people were thinking.
Dawn backs out, still wants to marry Al, and I love Taz. just bashing Al left and right. So Dawn comes out to show the hotel footage to push the feud. A long time waster. Kills the flow of the card, but it is really, really hot stuff. Dawn is undressing Tori, and they have a kiss, and the crowd pops big, and it was hot. I mean, these two chicks are very hot. The whole moment was really pretty well done, if not really long.
Yes. Yeah.
Al begs to end the footage. Dawn tells him to shut up. Al keeps begging. Taz tells him to shut up. Dawn,
shut up, you idiot!
This is the best part.
Let this
was
guy in.
Well, the best part is Dawn agrees to stop, and the crowd chants "asshole." And Dawn goes, "He isn't an asshole." And Taz goes, "He looks like one."
That's tremendous.
And then Dawn and Al leave. So, you know, this feud is a mess, and it's a long segment. But
the
height of the segment, I think, was probably worth the low points, at least on this one night.
Yeah,
they really delivered as far as they could go outside of when the cat took her top off. This is probably as far as they could go with some of the stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
made up for Katie Vick. I'll put it that
way. You kind of wish that you're, you know, that there's somewhere you're, you know, through osmosis, you can smell the strawberries in Tori's hair. Because the way she says that, the way Domery says that, your hair smells like strawberries. It's like, oh, Al, go away. And the rest of the segment is quite good. God, this guy's an idiot. It's just, even Cole's like, did you remember the one part? He's like, it's very quiet. And, you know, he says something, he's bitching or moaning, and all of a sudden you just hear something. And then Cole goes, God, Al, you're an ass. I like to think Vince was doing that backstage because they earned that. That's how funny it was. God, Al, you're an ass. Like, so it was awesome. So sadly, though, that's the best. That's the peak of that feud. And it just goes downhill from there. All right. We were all.
Yeah, Taz was just like, he looks like one.
God, Al, you're an idiot.
That was a great line.
Who let this guy in?
It was really
tremendous. All right. I don't know if, and of course, you know, Lawler had to get his fucking annoying two cents in. Yeah. Oh, I can't get up now. It's like, God, shut up. Stay with your own show.
Taz will show you how it's done, King. Back off.
Yeah, pretty much. All right. Next up, we have... I wouldn't say yes, it does, but he is not the focus here. We have a repackaging, and for the much better, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Kane, as you just heard, taking on the repackaged, no longer Deacon Bautista. We get rid of the U, and he is just Batista.
Mm-hmm.
Seconded by Ric Flair, which, of course, is a tremendously smart move. I like this match, actually. I didn't think it was terrible.
Background on...
Yeah, well, of course, yeah.
Okay.
First in the thing.
Huh?
No, I'm saying this is the first time he's been in the ring, so we haven't done the bio yet. I apologize.
We haven't. Jesus. Batista came from an unusual household as a child. His parents were divorced because his mother came out as a lesbian. Bischoff is very excited. He lived with his mom and lived in hard times. He said in his book that three murders occurred on his lawn. And by the age of 13, he was stealing cars. After doing odd jobs like bouncing at bars and lifeguarding, Dave went to WCW's power plant, but was told by Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker he'd never make it in the business. He would end up training with Afa, the former Samoan. Remember that guy?
I do.
Started training in 97. His debut match when he was signed with OVW was on 7/11/99, where he co-won a battle royal with Gilbert at Sports Fest 1999.
Jesus.
Dave, of course, would train, signed in 2000 immediately to OVW, had the name Leviathan. It was in the Disciples of Sin faction. He won the OVW heavyweight title and held it for a while before losing to the prototype, John Cena. He would come to duty in 2002, be given the name Deacon Bautista, like you mentioned. He was aligned with the Reverend Devon. Bautista was shipped to Raw and put with a new advisor, Mr. Ric Flair, who would be in his corner here to advise him going forward, which I liked that fit. I thought it was a pretty good usage of Flair.
Oh, absolutely.
Kane and Batista had actually fought before at OVW's Christmas Chaos on January 21st, 01. The show had been moved from December 12th due to a severe snowstorm in the Kentucky area. And so a little familiar with each other.
Mm.
Did you like Flair as the advisor? Obviously, just behind.
Oh, besides absolutely.
Your Flair boner.
Well, no, my Flair Dawn Marie. No, clearly, of course. I mean, if anybody needed a guy like him, it's a guy like Batista, who was right. You know just this big jacked up dude. He had the look Vince liked.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it's evident that you know, obviously he's got the look, and
right?
He
yeah, definitely, know. And you could tell a big push was in store. And yeah, I thought Flair and I have been established as a good manager with Triple H. So it was cool to see him branch out a little bit with Batista, and they keep him and Triple H separate. Flair's just almost like the old Heenan kind of Jimmy Hart kind of manager now. He's just got different guys with different agendas doing different things.
Right.
So he's got Batista now on the side that he's training. A good first test. Batista looks so young here. A really good douchebag look right out of the gate. You could tell that he had that look down from the start. Kane used a lot of power moves, and I thought they looked impressive with Batista taking a lot of the offense. Flair was great in the manager role for a young guy. Batista gets a nice suplex on Kane. Flair tries to attack Kane on the floor, but Kane no-sells it, which I thought was pretty funny, where Flair just keeps like chopping and punching at him, and Kane just looks at him. Things get sloppy. Kane hits a low blow on a top rope clothesline. Batista gets a nice spine buster. Kane plants him with a choke slam. Flair interferes and distracts, and Batista hits a powerbomb for the finish. A huge upset and a big win to get Batista rolling. And Flair played a major role throughout the match, which made a lot of sense. And a new player has been born.
Yep, absolutely. And it was cool. You know, we're in this stretch now where some things kind of flopped on SmackDown, and it was time to kind of reassess the roster. And obviously, Batista wasn't a guy you were going to waste. Like, oh, well, that gimmick didn't work. Send him back to OVW.
Right.
Absolutely not. No, you knew he was somebody who was just given something to kill time for a few months until they figured out what they could really do with him. And this is just the perfect opportunity, you know, and putting him with Flair. You really got that feeling that, well, obviously a guy the office likes and is going to, you know, get a good, you know, it's going to be a good 2003 for him, and obviously even longer than that. Did Kane, like, is Kane already lost, like, almost all of his luster at this point? After two, I mean,
luster,
two months ago, he was one of the hottest guys on the roster, and now he's, you know, just there.
He's definitely lost a lot of momentum. I'll say that. He's definitely lost a lot of momentum. He's definitely not that hot guy anymore. I don't disagree with putting Batista over him here. I thought that was a fine move.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for a guy that was super hot, one of the most over guys in the whole company in October, is now just putting over young guys. Just a quick drop for him.
Yeah.
And we'll fight. We'll see even in 03. He doesn't really get much of that momentum back for a long time. So he's had his peak here for a while, which is kind of sad considering how over he was.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go. Batista, his first pay-per-view appearance, his first pay-per-view win over Kane. I know we have a non-wrestling segment in the arena, but do we have anything backstage?
Nothing backstage, but like you said, out in the arena, John Cena joins us, Scott.
Ooh.
And he's joined by Bull Buchanan.
Ooh.
And they're rapping.
What?
John Cena and Bling Bling, B Square, Buchanan come out and they cut a freestyle. cut a freestyle rap for the fans. If you remember back on the Halloween episode of SmackDown, Cena dressed like Vanilla Ice for the party and wowed everyone with cutting freestyles. Cena had been known for his skills backstage, was given a chance to carry that personality on TV. The segment was successful. Cena was allowed to stick with the rapping gimmick, began wearing throwback jerseys and cut scathing rap promos before his matches. Hooked up with the aimless Bull Buchanan. And renamed him Bling Bling to be his backup. And the rumor is that this transition saved John Cena because they were looking at maybe letting him go, or they didn't think that he really had what it took. And as you know, he ended up sticking around for quite a while. So this ends up being quite the save if it's true. And
well, what's funny is he there's almost no response from the arena. So it took a little time to get that gimmick over. And but once it did, though, it definitely saved him. I didn't see him turn around. Of course, I think we'll document the throwbacks over time. On this night, he was wearing a throwback Pittsburgh Pirates jersey, an old school, which I own, stovetop hat.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see who was on the back, though. I don't know if it was just a pirate jersey or I don't know if it had like Dave Parker, Roberto Clemente or something.
Crap. Yeah, I can't remember now.
Yeah, I don't remember if they showed the back of his jersey, but we'll have many of those over the coming months. So, all right, next up we have our second title match of the evening, JR. Actually, we're going to finish the show with title matches. Mm-hmm. Our women's championship is online. Your champion, as we mentioned, Victoria, who beat Trish Stratus at Survivor Series in that awesome hardcore match, in a triple threat with Trish Stratus getting her rematch, and thrown in the middle of nowhere, Jacqueline, a.k.a. Jackie.
Yes.
How the heck did she get involved in this?
Jackie was still bumming around on the 12-2 Raw. Victoria's caught going through Jackie's bags backstage. Despite her win over Trish, her jealousy was at an all-time high, and she was looking to eradicate all the other divas on the roster. After Jackie caught her, they got into an argument, and a match was made. Jackie would pick up the non-title win in an upset. Victoria had also started a relationship with Stevie Richards, and Stevie began accompanying her to the ring and often aided her in her matches and helped her win. And Scott, we have a new theme song for Victoria here.
Mm-hmm.
Remember this, Jim? It was an interesting time period because I thought we were starting to move into a rarity for the company at this point where they were actually starting to use actual real songs for their mm-hmm. wrestlers. And it was something they hadn't done a ton of in the past.
Right.
And we heard it earlier with the Dudleys here, the Victoria, and I feel like it comes a little bit more prevalent over the next couple months. And this one was a good fit for Victoria. Fit very, very well. The voice, all the things she said, voices in my head. By Tattoo, of course, T-A-T-U, the Russian lesbian band. The song, a lot of lesbian talk tonight. So this song was released on September 20th, 02 in America, came number 20 on the USA Billboard number 100 Hot Hits, number 8 in the Top 40 Mainstream Billboard, and it was actually number 1 in the UK Top 40 for a time as well. So pretty popular song, and it's an Adam Murray type jam. It's one I always think of him when I hear. Gonna have a latte, latte, latte. So there you go.
Oh, God.
All the things she said.
I wonder what they're doing now.
Hot Lesbian Action. I think it's still performing.
TATU, Russian music duo.
Yeah.
They're managed by Ivan Shapovalov. While in the group Nepasedi.
Mm-hmm.
They established there with their debut single, All the Things She Said. Say anything about them about them being lesbians, though?
I'm fairly certain they were lesbians.
Okay. Not really. Oh, they're cute, though.
Well, that means they're great performers in your eyes.
Exactly. Yeah. Who cares what they sing like? They're singing. No. Musicians are different than actresses. Musicians have to at least sound good. If singers have a crappy voice, that's dumb. But
apparently they're fake lesbians. They're not lesbians. They were thought to be. We never pretended to be lesbians. It's just that what people thought of us. All right. There you go.
They sing protest songs about NATO aggression on Yugoslavia. Yeah, lesbians.
Well, they also defended Russia's... they performed at Russia's Sochi's opening ceremony this year, even though they are anti-homosexual in Russia, so...
Yes, then they broke up. They don't have any... they're very upset with each other.
Actually, so. Maybe it was just a tease that they may. I don't know. There's so many rumors out there right now about Tattoo and what they got going on.
Yep. They admitted numerous interviews that they were in porn, Russian porn, which is quite interesting. So,
I look forward to Ryan Schmark's comments on the Facebook page about Tattoo's legacy. All right, so
I envision us talking about Russian porn.
Odd matchup. Seems like an excuse not just to run a singles rematch by putting Jackie in here. It's like they wanted to avoid doing that for some reason. Victoria pushed hard as crazy and strong. Stevie now in her corner. Victoria had the great new song. Jackie, a renewed push out of nowhere. Nice double back suplex on Trish by both ladies. Quick pace early with all three brawling. Victoria has a really nice superplex. Jackie gets a burst of offense. Trish makes a comeback with a kick. Trish gets good at... Trish is gutting good at hitting her moves and her timing. Mm-hmm. I thought she just needed to continue to fill the gaps in the rest of her arsenal. So, right. Like, she seemed a little bit lost in between, but when it came time to hit those big spots, she wasn't too bad at it.
She had
that timing down.
Yeah, she definitely got timing down, and having Victoria there didn't hurt. She obviously has a little bit of experience, and Jacqueline obviously is a ring veteran, so this was a good setup for her. And we're going to get to the point. I'm sure some listeners probably are thinking, Jesus, guys, you keep talking as if she's, you know, she, like, is in, like, school, but... we're getting to the point where Trish clearly is becoming a standard bearer for the division. She's definitely earned the right to be in that spot.
Yep.
But I mean, we have to admit, I mean, she came here almost 2 years ago having zero experience. Mm-hmm. So to pretty much be one of the first, I mean, let's be honest, JR, she's probably one of the first and only performers, male or female, in wrestling history to pretty much learn on the job and not just, you know, indies or territories. I mean, we're talking, wow, you've never wrestled a match in your entire life and you're going to be doing pay-per-views, Raws and SmackDowns for your to get yourself ready. I mean, who ever had that chance? Nobody, really. So I applaud her, and she didn't take for granted. She's not like, oh, I'm on TV. Nobody really cares how I wrestle. She didn't take that philosophy whatsoever. And I think you're getting to that point now where she's like Edge. She's a female version. She's a women's version of Edge, in that she's slowly getting to that point now where she's carrying herself well in matches without the help of anybody. But again, she's also gotten lucky enough to have good opponents this year too. So, and this was not a bad match.
No, she hits a near fall with a chick kick and awkward delayed pin while she's waiting for Victoria to break it up. She kind of looks around. Yeah. Trish wipes out Jackie, but Victoria uses the belt on Trish and then pins Jackie to steal the match. Awkward match here and there, but I thought it was fine enough. All three are solid workers, and Victoria takes Trish's hat and walks off with it. So our dominant, powerful, crazy, maybe Russian lesbian world champion, women's champion, still on top of the division here, and Trish still on the hunt. And then, Scott, before we take a break here, we go backstage.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt meets with Brock Lesnar finally, gets him riled up about Heyman screwing him, and asks him to be in his corner so he can watch and be close to Heyman for revenge. Brock promises Kurt won't regret getting the suspension lifted, because that was a story that Kurt had worked with Stephanie to lift Brock's suspension that had been put in place so he didn't, I think it was what, so he didn't hurt himself. I think that was the story.
Right.
Kurt then plays the Survivor Series tape for Brock and walks out of the room. So trying to fire up Brock so he'll come out and be in Kurt's corner.
Yes. You know, they had a music video in April of this year called Love in Every Moment. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. Kurt and Brock.
I think it was video called Oral Vampire.
Oral, yes. Twilight porn. all right. Why don't we take a break? When we come back, last two matches, our main event matches, both big champion, the top level championships on the line, the WWE title and the World Heavyweight title on the line in two huge main events. First, some words. 4K.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture. Whatever's on your mind, too, we'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, PlaceToBeNation.com.
Let me know you in the house.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, Giorgio Bellino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point, here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island, and look for the great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. And a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Police Simulation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, ProWrestlingOnly.com, Scott Keith blog at RSPWFAQ.net, and PileDriverWrestling.net.
Hey, this is Ed Banger Thrasher, and you're listening to Where? What the fuck is it? The Place to Be podcast. So you better not miss it, because I'm on it.
Alrighty, Nation, we are back here reviewing Armageddon 2002 as we look to wrap up this paper, another pay-per-view year, Scott, in the books here. And Chad Campbell had done a little Vintage Vault previewing for this, like he always does, but he's starting a trek, Scott. And that trek is he's going to review every Triple H match from now until, is it WrestleMania 20, I think he's going to do? So all of 2003 yeah. into early 04, mm-hmm. Starting here at the end of 02. So before every Vintage Vault, he's going to do a previewing of Triple H's match on that card. So we'll see how insane he goes as we move along. Now, of course, there'll be a few shows where there isn't a Triple H match, so he'll still get to mix in others when mm-hmm. we do some of the SmackDown-only shows in 03. Mm-hmm. The movies of the Place to Be generations continued. We're up through 1986. Mm-hmm. And also continuing is the World Cup of Television characters. Please get your vote to now. We're in through groups M and N. Every group has eight names. You pick four. The top four in each group will move on to a bracket of 128, which will begin in a few weeks.
Can I make a point of personal preference here, sure. JR? For bracket N,
Vote Steve Sanders. Yes, we need the mullet. We need Sanders. We need in. Steve Sanders. Let's damn see it. See where he's at right now. He was tied for fourth, I think. He is. He's tied with Rob Petrie from Dick Van Dyke Show. Ugh, so even I don't want the old guy. Come on, Steve Sanders. We need Sanders in. Let's go. We got to get some votes. We need in. As many 90210 people as possible. We're going to clog the brackets with 90210. And Alf is dominating Group M. I know that was amazing. You may keep Stringer Bell out, which is impressive. Yeah. So all your characters are in there. It's a lot of fun doing the votes each and every day. Just check back. We'll have a couple pools up, and we're looking for heavy participation here, so make sure you join in. We also had a debut of the new All the Things podcast with our buddy Johnny Sorrow and his friend Jackson Crowley. Pretty much just a pop culture podcast. It's less than an hour, and it's almost like Beavis and Butthead style. We're just riffing on stuff, and if you've heard Johnny Sorrow on Titans, as well as you've heard him on the pay-per-view review shows too, a lot of funny stuff, and he's a really cool guy. Him and Jackson do a great job with that show. Check it out. Speaking of podcasts, we had part two and three of the Giant Size Hard Traveling Fanboys podcast with the whole PTBN Comics crew. Nick and Greg led the way with Tim and Russell and... What am I drawing a blank? Hurry up. Yo, why are you leaving me hanging? Tim, Russell, and... Todd Weber. Thank you.
Thank you.
I forgot about Todd since he doesn't really write anymore, so that's why I'm calling you out. All right. Also, I had the second annual JR's Treasure Trove. I recapped the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest, Scott, for the second year in a row.
Nice.
Could check out last year's and this year's. Did Joey Chestnut retain his crown? He was going for his eighth straight win. Did Matt Stoney knock him off? And where is my beautiful sideline reporter? She was missing in action this year. I was very, very sad. My girl Renee Herlocker was not there. But be sure to read my review. And there is a picture of Renee for you all to enjoy. The tribute to America, told to the world of wrestling, went up again this year. A video mixed bag and celebrating Americana throughout the history of wrestling. So a little jingoistic jingoism. You like that?
There you go.
Describe you, jingoistic jingoist.
Jingoistic jingoist.
We had new episodes of The Bauer Show, The Still Real to Us podcast, a whole new Great Five Count where we counted down our favorite kings of the ring. It wasn't just tournament winner Scott. It was also other guys that held the crown throughout company history. So we had a murderer's row on that five count. A couple of new episodes of Where the Big Boys Play, the most recent, Clash 15, Knoxville, USA. A new piece by Maurice Pogue. And a new podcast that we had last Wednesday. Go back and listen. The Network Live Watch, we had Steve Willey, Roger Morissette, Jordan Duncan joined us to the February 15th and 22nd Monday Night Raws. Of course, had the return of Hulk Hogan to the company. So lots to check out, policemanation.com. Each and every day, hit us up at facebook.com/placetobenation. Also, Twitter, place2benation, or email us at info@placetobenation.com. Click the Amazon link on the side. Head over to Amazon, spend some money, and send a little kickback to us. Help keep all this shit free. So, there you go.
All right. Now let's go back to Fort Lauderdale. Oh. Let's go back to the jingoisms of...
The biggest jingoist of jingoistic...
Jingoisms. Okay. My internet's a little wonky here. Okay. Next up.
You're wonky. He's the wonky tonk man.
The wonky tonk.
He's a wonky tonk man.
He's a wonky tonk man.
Oh, for those that were really drooling over it, their 13 Saturday Night's main events are on the network now. They were going to wait till after Raw, but they're there now. Everybody who was freaking out about it.
I ain't renewing this shit.
Okay. Next up, WWE Championship on the line.
Okay.
Hadn't had a title shot since a year. I would say Vengeance 01.
Paradise. Girls look pretty. Ooh, they look nice.
That's a new song. You need to add it on the end there. Paradise each and every day.
That's right.
I actually have some stats here, courtesy of Mr. Sutton. Let me pull this shit up. Kurt Angle, it has been 658 days since he last held the World WWE Championship. Dropped it to The Rock. Mm-hmm. Been 658 days since the last two stages of Hell match. What the fuck does that mean? Three stages of Hell? Is that what he meant? So that's for the other main event.
Yes. Two stages.
And he also says since The Rock, but he did have that 1 month title run as well in later in 01. Of course, he beat Steve Austin and lost it back a few weeks later. So maybe he's just pointing out it's been that long. I don't know, son. I'm about to start proofreading this shit.
Does he write in British speak? Is that what the...
No, I'm guessing he was just pointing out his last lengthy reign, I'm sure. But, of course, he had the two-week reign in 01 as well.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
All right.
That was only because the pay-per-view was in Pittsburgh.
Sorry, that fact wasn't as exciting as I thought it was. On the 12-5 SmackDown, Kurt Angle won a fatal four-way against Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit, and Edge to become the number one contender and get the WWE title shot against The Big Show here. Show came out after the match and Show slammed Angle. The following week on 12-12, Angle and Edge were facing Big Show and A-Train in a tag match. Angle was about to put Show in the ankle lock, but Heyman distracted him, and Show hit a choke slam for the win. On the 11-28 SmackDown, the injured Brock Lesnar was causing a ruckus backstage, tossing guys around before Heyman and Show were about to go cut a promo. Stephanie warned Brock not to lay a hand on either man or should be forced to suspend him. During the promo, Heyman officially fired Brock as his client. After Show talked for a bit, Brock hopped to the crowd, grabbed a chair, and came in swinging. After the attack, Stephanie gave Brock one more chance and one more stern warning. But later that night, when Show fought Edge and Lesnar, Lesnar again intervened, this time hitting an F5 on Show. The next week, Stephanie finally suspended Brock for his own protection. He would be escorted from the arena by cops, but returned later that night and F5'd Show again, but this time was through a table. Finally, in 12-12, we saw footage of Brock at an autograph signing. Kurt appeared in line and asked to speak with Brock about something. Kurt offered to get Brock's suspension lifted if Brock would second him in Armageddon to help offset Heyman at ringside. He said they then could have the greatest match of all time after Angle won the belt. Brock said he would consider assisting if the suspension was lifted. And earlier in the night, as we mentioned, Steph lifted the suspension and the questions started flowing. Scott, also around this time, word began seeping out that Angle is experiencing serious neck pain and may eventually need surgery to fix it. He would try to lay low over the next month in hoping the pain would subside. Do you remember those rumors of him being hurt?
Yes, I do. Big deal.
Yeah, I mean, he was a guy they needed. You know, they definitely needed him at this point, so it would have not been good if he had to be out for a long period of time. So Kurt, now a face pretty much, won the four-way. Brock, Big Show, been legitimized, useful now, good presence as champ. Kurt comes out alone, no Brock, focused. Interesting main event mix on SmackDown. Feels a little bit softer than Raw, kind of flipped since the fall when SmackDown felt to have the more dominant main event scene. Now we feel like SmackDown's become kind of the secondary title feud.
Yeah.
Kurt tries to break Big Show down, but Show fights him off. Kurt gets dumped onto the floor, and he falls on top of Heyman. Kurt does a nice job selling Show's strength. Show really dominates, hitting all his power moves and angles of selling and bumping around. Big Show works a bear hug, slows the pace down. The crowd, you could tell, is just waiting for Angle's comeback. It was pretty cool seeing Angle work from underneath, though. Work as the small guy against the big power guy in a match. I agree. Crowd rallies Kurt. He hits a missile dropkick for a near fall. Heyman was down for a while. Show survives an Angle slam. Ref gets bumped. Heyman puts a chair in the ring, and the crowd starts chanting for Brock. Kurt uses the chair, but Big Show kicks out. Big Show taps to the ankle lock, but the ref is down. A-Train comes out and attacks Kurt. Hits a backbreaker and basically pushing forward his new alliance with Big Show. Big Show chokeslam. Brock makes a save. Hits an F5 to a mega pop. Brock chases Heyman off, and Kurt covers for the win. It's a chaotic finish. Match was much better than it should have been. Big Show did his job, and the crowd stayed with it, and we get the Brock payoff of screwing Big Show out of the title. Now, I believe it was Brad had mentioned this when we were watching the show the other day. Did you feel it made Kurt look soft that he had to keep begging Brock to help him out?
I do think that they were trying to shoehorn Brock to. Heyman, obviously.
I'll give you a hint. I'm going to say no, but go ahead.
I want to say no, too. It did seem like they were overstating the fact that they needed to get Brock involved in this package somehow because it is ultimately his feud and his belt.
Well, the reason I say no is because of what comes after this.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean,
it ends up being part of a plan. So,
yeah. Well, that too, yeah. At the time, though, before we even knew that,
right.
I would say
I don't
no.
Think so. I think only because Heyman had been playing such a role in everyone's matches, like Brock's matches the whole year and now Big Show's, that it made sense that he felt like he needed someone out there to just keep an eye on Heyman. So, but as we'll see, it does end up being part of a ruse and a plan that unfolds over the coming weeks that makes things kind of weird. It kind of makes Big Show look like an idiot as we move forward.
Yeah.
Did you think the match was better than you expected heading in?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, it's Kurt, so you're not going to get a total piece of crap. But again, I mean, if Kurt's neck was hurting and he was feeling some issues in his, you know, maybe in his arms, some nerve pain or numbness, then he was definitely working behind the eight ball here against the guy. You know, it's Big Show. There's only so much you could do with him. But I thought it was definitely better than it should have been. They didn't make it ridiculously long, just over 12 and a half minutes. It needed to have some length. I mean, it was a world title. It was a WWE title match after all, so you couldn't really make it like 2.5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Not like Big Show's title match 3 years to the month the last time they were in this building when Big
right.
Show fought when Big Show fought Big Boss Man, and the match was like 3.5 minutes. This was a little different. But no, I don't think it was that big a deal. You maybe at times you think that they were really trying to force Brock into the storyline, but clearly, like you said, there was, you know, a bigger master plan in place. But otherwise, no, I don't think it was that big a deal. Needed to get Brock on the show somehow. So I think it worked out like that. Yeah, I had no problem with it.
Okay.
So there you go. Kurt Angle.
New champion.
How do you feel now? New WWE champion.
Yeah, it's good. I'm glad to see him back. I'm glad to see him back on top. It's been a while. It's good to see. Excited.
Also debuted that very cool shirt, the one that said Submit.
Yes.
It was one of my favorite. That might be one of my favorite Kurt shirts of all time. The deep, dark blue. It's not like, you know, it wasn't too
right.
Gaudy looking. I think it may be one of Kurt's best shirts that they ever made. The one that just said Submit. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and it was a good person to have back on top. If Brock's battling that rib injury, he's not going to be your guy. You can't run Big Show for too long on top, so go to a tried and tested guy. And it was ballsy, though,
mm-hmm.
because the word was out there that Angle was hurt. So it was risky to put the belt on him because you didn't know if he was going to have to miss any time. The neck injury is already making him miss TV a little bit. He wouldn't really wrestle much on TV at all over the next couple weeks.
Mm.
And you could tell they were trying to protect him. So things are starting to get a little bit dicey in the injury department. And what seemed like a very deep SmackDown roster all of a sudden feels a little thin. And Raw almost starts to feel like a little bit deeper in a weird twist. So, because now don't forget we lost Taker's off, taking a break. Mm-hmm. Brock's not wrestling. Now Kurt isn't wrestling. So they're going to have to rely on the remainder of those. And I think even Rey Mysterio was hurt too, because I'm pretty sure that Albert messing his knee up was just to give him some time off to rehab as well. So.
Mm.
We don't. We're losing a lot of that mid-card depth we had in the fall. Now all of a sudden it's Benoit, Eddie, you know, Cena, and Bling
Edge.
Blink. Edge. I mean, they don't have a lot of big depth on the SmackDown side of things right now, which is interesting to see after how loaded they were in the fall.
Do you think that was because, you know, Taker was in those matches at Unforgiven, and
well, he was able
no
to carry the main events. Yeah, so the undercard was stacked with all the SmackDown 6 guys, and now you take away one of the main eventers, and you blow a hole through the mid-card, and now it's kind of like, okay, you took away both main eventers because Brock's not wrestling. So now all of a sudden, you got nothing left.
Yeah.
Benoit, Eddie, and A-Train, and Edge. I mean, that's you look at this card, those are the four guys.
Yep.
And Big Show, and that's pretty much it. So you've really taken it. I mean, outside that guy, they got Benoit, Eddie, and Chavo, really, because the rest, and I guess Edge, but the rest is all banged up.
Mm.
So SmackDown, maybe that stretch of going all balls to the wall in the fall has really, you know, riddled it with bullet holes throughout the Blue Brand.
But I think the Blue Brand makes a recovery as we get to 2003, though. I think it does, based on what you see in-ring from the Red Brand. But we'll talk more about that when we get into 2003. All right, so there you go, Kurt Angle, your new WWE champion. MIPIC is verklempt. All right, speaking of verklempt, time to get to the other half of our double main event. and the world.
Time to play the game.
It's amazing how you knock me off my feet. I won't go.
Why, you know, I just smile because I love that combo, but for some reason I laugh out loud when that comes on. I don't know why.
It's very happy and fitting song.
It is, yeah, it is very happy. All right. As we saw at Survivor Series, for the first time since Montreal, Shawn Michaels wins a title match, and he is your World Heavyweight Champion, winning in the chamber, pinning Triple H at Madison Square Garden. Well, of course, the game does not stand for that. And I was at JR, the Raw, the night after. The doctor and I went. It was at the, I believe it was my first, was it my first Raw? Yes, my first Raw at the new, now called Webster Bank Arena in Bridgeport.
Mm-hmm.
And we were teased.
Yes.
They ended up having the match the next week, but man, were we pissed.
Teased very hard.
Teasing a Shawn Michaels RVD world title match live. Oh my God, was everybody stoked. And then it went right in the stinker. And the crowd the week after got it, which was, I was jealous. Still a good match, but that was awesome.
Yep.
Also got he's not on this show, so we can mention him.
Mm-hmm.
Raw debut for Scott Steiner.
Yes.
He came out that night. We marked out big time. We went crazy.
Well, yeah, he was teasing what show he was going to sign on. He would end up signing with Bischoff and Raw.
Yes.
Triple H had helped Michaels win that match against RVD because he wanted him to remain champion, and then on 12-2, defeated RVD in a number one contenders match to get the match here. On 12-9, Bischoff announced that the World Heavyweight title match in Armageddon would be a three stages of hell bout. First of all, it would be a street fight, second, in a cage, third, a ladder. The blood feud continued that night when Michaels attacked Triple H and Ric Flair with an iron shovel outside the arena, smashed Triple H in the head with a trash can, which led to Triple H falling into a dumpster. Michaels climbed to the top of a trailer and splashed Triple H inside the dumpster. Mm-hmm. So no straight match on the three stages of hell this time around. If you remember back in 01.
The first match was.
Austin.
First fall was.
Yes, Hunter had the first fall. Was just a straight-up one-on-one match. Mm-hmm. So as we mentioned earlier, 658 days since the last three stages of hell match. It has been 1,800 days since Shawn Michaels' last in a steel cage match. I think we mentioned this at MSG. He had teamed with the New Age Outlaws to take on Taker and LOD. It has been 2,243 days, 74 months, since Shawn Michaels was last in a ladder match against Goldust in a house show on August 24th in Toronto. 2,667 days since his last televised ladder match against Razor Ramon, SummerSlam 1995.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of days since
Shawn. So it's amazing. The same pay-per-view, the same night that Kurt Angle was last WWE champion, was our last three stages of hell. Same night!
Well, no, he was champion in September when we talked about.
That's true. Everybody forgets.
Same night we talked about earlier. So HBK finally feels back now. You know, it's cool to see him with the belt. And he still has those twinges of the old HBK that we've mentioned. Because we'll see what he becomes later. But here, he still feels like that old HBK. We haven't really completely transitioned yet to the new HBK. So Hunter forces him into a rematch and a pretty good stip choices to finish this feud, all gimmicks. Bischoff tried to pick one that favored each man. Flair tossed right away as soon as the bell rings. Hunter goes right to the back with some basic brawling early on with some weapons teases. Hunter's quad is all taped up here. Michaels gets a chair backbreaker payback finally, and Michaels starts working the back to even the score. Hunter blocks Sweet Chin Music with a nice knee DDT type move where he like picks Sean's leg up and spikes it to the ground. Hunter targets the knee, good to mix up the focus instead of the back like we keep seeing over the previous matches. King points out how well Hunter knows HBK's offense and he keeps countering it. Hunter goes to the figure four and hits a nasty trash can lid to the face. And this is a spot you wanted to talk about, Scott, where Hunter lights a barbed wire 2x4 in the aisle, sets it on fire. Michaels avoids it and uses it to a big pop, and then he like throws it. near the stands.
On a pile of confetti.
Yes, it was not very safe. He just like chucks it towards the fans.
I know.
So Michael's getting a lot of shots in here instead of just taking the whole beating and then fighting back in this first fall, which is different to see.
Yep.
A very long first fall, a lot of repeating of weapon shots, a lot of selling. Michaels ends up eating a pedigree to lose the first fall, and I thought Chad made a good point in his previewing, saying how it was almost like Michael started getting a little bit too confident in his offense and his control of the match, and then Hunter catches him off guard with the pedigree and gets the first pin. So Hunter goes up 1-0 after a fall that Sean really dominated. Did you agree that it was too long? It felt like they started getting repetitious because they had to fill some time.
Well, I wasn't expecting the first fall to go 20 minutes. And a street fight was a tough... This should have been a straight wrestling match because these guys already did a street fight at SummerSlam, and that match is one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
So I don't know if doing it again was the smartest idea. I almost think I have two comments about this, but okay. I do think that the first fall did go a little long. Yeah.
Okay. So the cage comes down. Hunter loads the ring with weapons. Cage starts very similar to the street fight with a slow Hunter weapons attack. Mixes in the cage steel, using it as a cheese grater basically. Michaels gets good blood as always. Hunter tries to escape, but Michaels finally starts to come back. Flair returns as Michaels and Triple H are fighting on top of the cage. Way too many gimmicks and weapons for these two guys. It feels like they're going out of their way to try and win fans over with a brawl, like a garbage brawl.
It felt
very out of place. It just wasn't them. Flair gets into the cage. Michaels wipes out both with chairs. Now Flair's bleeding as well. Michaels fights off them both again and then splashes Triple H through the table to even up the match. Very long two falls. In fact, they were... How long were these first falls?
29:45. Well, the first fall was 20:33.
Right.
Second fall was 9:12.
Right. So a half hour for the first two falls.
Yep, 29:45 for the first two.
And that meant the last fall only will go about 5 minutes here. So pacing felt very off. Carnage thrown all around the ring. That was one of the coolest spots of the match show where they raise the cage and like Flair's laying there bloody, all the garbage around the ring. Michaels and Hunter are down. So they clear all that out. I thought the cage should have been last and no ladder step. It's kind of awkward how they raise the cage and bring the ladder into the ring and lower the belts. Flair gets carted off. All the plunder cleaned out. Michael's blood is all dried up yet again. Michaels tries to splash off a ladder, but misses. The match is just slowed way down. Michaels is desperate stop of Hunter's climbing and then knocks him to the floor with Sweet Chin Music. Michaels climbs up the ladder and then gets shoved off through all the tables that had been set up by Flair earlier in the match. It was a good bump to close the match. And I thought it was a sad short close to Michael's title run, which I wanted to see more of because it was so unique and cool at the time. But Hunter needed the belt back to stabilize it and get back on that run that he was building towards to really build that title up. I thought this was way too long. I thought it was overbooked. I didn't think they needed this much. It was solid, but not a classic by any means. And I just thought they went way overboard trying to deliver what they thought needed to be delivered or trying to win the fans over. Like you said, we saw this at SummerSlam. We saw a cage of Survivor Series, and we need to see that all again.
Three points, actually. I just added a second one, a third one as I'm looking at my comments.
Hulk
number
Hogan
one.
Added the amendments on. Go ahead.
Yeah. Believe in. Number one, it was freaky for a guy who was the face of the WWF during the time of the Monday Night Wars, the NWO and the wars and everything, to see him walk out with, in essence, WCW's belt was kind of strange.
Yeah.
It was kind of freaky. Number two, you talked earlier about the roster just being so good in ring and matches were great. I think Sean coming back really solidified that for the fans. I think visually, as much as we already know that SmackDown had great talent in ring, that Sean coming back made everybody think, wow, everything's right in the world again. You know, not only do we have a great roster on SmackDown, but then Raw, we have, you know, evil, selfish, awesome heel Triple H and his and Flair. And but now we got our heroes back, our real hero, the icon, the main event, Mr. Rest, you know, he's back. And I think that visually in the back of people's minds really made them embrace the roster as an in-ring product. I think he was the cherry on the sundae in terms of the work rate. So to back up your point you said earlier about just matches were incredible on TV and pay-per-view, right. I think Shawn coming back really put the cherry on the sundae for that.
Yep.
All right. Thirdly, I agree with you 100% that we didn't need to have like the true Armageddon of an Armageddon match. Do we really have to have 65,000? We need to have the biggest stips. I'm surprised they didn't throw a Hell in a Cell for the fourth fall.
Right.
I mean,
yeah, it was absurd.
Throw everything in there because it needs to be these two. We need the most epic world title match in the history of the world.
The end of the world. That's what they're trying to make it like. Yeah. You know, it was the end of the world.
No, you didn't. We had that match. Yeah. You guys had your five-star match at SummerSlam.
No, I agree with you 100%.
Let me keep that match in my mind as your guys' perfect match. I didn't need a perfect match. I just wanted a good match. And I knew with these two, you'd get a good match. I'm fine with 3.5 stars. You don't have to try and give me 5, and then it ends up being like a 3 when you could have just cruised to a 4. You know what I mean? You almost took points away trying too hard.
No, they didn't need to. And you know? We kind of talked about this a little bit at SummerSlam because remember we referenced Scott Keith's review.
Mm-hmm.
Did we feel like they needed what they did? And I think that's even more true here.
Like, yeah. I disagreed with that then.
Yeah.
I agree with it now.
They didn't need nearly what they got here. I mean, this was they just did a straight ladder, I guess. But even the ladder match felt a little bit out of place. I thought they should have done like a First Blood. Like, that would have been fine if you want to end the feud. Like, that to me, that's a good blow-off kind of match.
Or if you even want to do the ladder match, do like they sometimes have done where two guys wrestle representing, you know, the guys, and whoever guy wins gets the stip. And, you know, Hunter could have picked a cage or something, right. And Sean could have picked the ladder match, and Sean's guy wins, and then just have the match a ladder match.
Yeah.
That way, you know, psychologically, you feel Sean has the advantage, and then Triple H still wins.
No, I agree. I think this is way too convoluted. The timing is all effed up. It goes really long the first couple falls. The ladder only goes 5 minutes. It felt very rushed and very forced, and they were going for an epic, and we'll see this as an epidemic with these two guys over the next 2 years.
Yeah.
They keep trying to force this epic, and they already had it. We had it at SummerSlam. We didn't need it again.
Right.
And I'm fine with them wrestling here. Like, that's cool, but I don't think we needed it to be this.
Just because the belt's involved now doesn't mean that it has to be. There's only one Ric Flair. There's only one Ricky Steamboat, okay? Leave them in 1989.
Right.
You guys forge your own legacy as great workers and stop trying to recreate Clash of the Champions 6.
Right. And No Way Out 01, it made sense because of the gravity of that feud. This one, it didn't feel like it was there yet. Like, we just saw them have a great finish of that cage match. We just saw them have an awesome street fight. We didn't need this 3 stages of hell here.
Yeah, we didn't need zillions of... And I almost feel like you had talked about Sean dictating the pace and really putting over his offense and using a lot of weapons, which is very un-Sean-like. And I think that's where part of that comes in. I feel like Sean himself was trying too hard to put on...
It felt like they needed to put on like an ECW-style match to keep the crowd happy or something.
Right.
Like, that's what it felt like. They were like, hey, we can do this shit too. Like, that's what it felt like to me.
Yeah, and it's Shawn Michaels, guys. You don't need... And I'll have an issue with a Shawn match that everybody loves, you know, about 4.5 years down the line. There's a Shawn match that irks me for almost the same reason, that something was needed, that something was added to the match that wasn't needed.
Right.
And when we get down the line, I'll talk about that. But it's Shawn Michaels, guys.
No, he can build heat and sympathy without...
Why are you making this so hard on yourself?
They didn't need all the gimmicks. They just didn't
need
it. I know they were trying to go for the end of the world feel and the heat feel, but I agree. It just wasn't completely needed here.
No, it was over the line. There was no need for all this... I like the match. I would never not watch the match, but watching it today, you do think to yourself, Jesus, what's going on here? This match is 17 minutes old.
It felt like 3 stages of hell watching it.
it was. And I didn't feel that way, and you didn't feel that way, and we just watched it, you know, fairly recently over the last few months of Triple H and Stone Cold at No Way Out 01. I didn't feel that way.
No, that felt... I think having the straight match helped that one. Because this one, after the first fall, we've already seen all the garbage brawling.
Right.
Like, we didn't need it all again. You know, the Austin Hunter was much more balanced and made much more sense and was just better overall. So Yeah, disappointing, but your boy is back on top as world
champion.
Yes,
he is.
And I thought it made that part. I thought made sense. I do, because you wanted to restabilize that belt with the heel because they had other plans, and it was his belt. And the Shawn thing felt almost like a just kind of a vanity. Okay, let's give him the title, and he's back, and say thank you, like a thank you run kind of thing.
Right, exactly. And now, does it still bug you though? Now it's funny because you said at Survivor Series you think Shawn didn't need the belt, and then here at Armageddon you said, oh, you would have liked to see. So did it change your mind over that month?
Yeah, because that match with RVD kind of opened my eyes to, ooh, he could have had a cool little run here for a while, you know? Especially right. with SmackDown in such flux, maybe you have some novelty matches with Shawn throughout the winter heading into the Rumble or something like that, and then maybe you switch it back there. But I know they had just signed Steiner, and they had plans for that, so he had to get the belt back on Hunter. But it was just kind of cool. It was neat seeing Michaels with the belt. Plus, word is starting to creep out a little bit more, too, that Shawn was maybe going to be around more than we thought. So that made me think, oh, okay.
Yeah, did it still have that temporary feel
it
even
did.
At this point?
It does for a while, because there's a point that comes where, even though he starts wrestling more, and we'll talk about this, it was not meant to be, like, full time.
Right.
Like, he was just going to do a couple TV here and there and some pay-per-views, and then it becomes like, okay, he's going to go on the road. Like, that's not until the end of 03 almost.
Yeah.
So it's still a while where we're waiting for that other shoe to drop. Like, I kept waiting to hear, okay, now he had his title run. And then you start hearing, well, you might want to have one more WrestleMania match. Okay, and maybe he'll be around till April, and then he'll retire. You didn't realize, I don't think you realized how much he was going to stick around for a long time.
Right. So there you go. Triple H, once again, World Heavyweight Champion to end the year. So there we go. Now, JR, before we conclude, I know you're about to do our goodbyes. We've had a good paced show tonight, but I need to say this. I've thought about this all day today.
Okay.
You know, we have our jibes, and you kind of give me, you know, you throw your little jibes, and you play your little music about, you know, my guy and his belt, and, you know, all the bromance and all that. But, you know, I'm trying to do that with you. You have a guy, and he's the top of the mountain now, and you're always so ambivalent about it. But you need to embrace it. You spend too much time letting me embrace it. But it's time for you to embrace it. Stop sloughing it off. It's cool to have a guy who's at the, you know, a favorite guy at the top of the mountain. And here he is. You know, all the times that, you know, one guy's been champion and the other guy's hurt. And then my guy's champion and your guy's in some shitty feud. But now look at this. Since the brand extension, our guys are on top of the mountain. Your guy, the top guy on SmackDown. My guy, the top guy on Raw. Finally, you could share in this joy and celebration. So let's do that. Let's sing. Seriously, let's share a moment. You get all like all cool and all right, placetobenation.com, but no, and stop hiding from it. Enjoy it. Your moment's here. Your guy's on top. Enjoy it. So let's do it. Come on, sing. You keep playing all these songs. Sing with me. I picked a song just for us. Just for us right now. What do you think?
I'll be your wish, I'll be your fantasy.
Come on!
I'll be your love, be everything that you need.
I love you more with every breath, truly, madly, deeply do.
I'll be as strong, I will be faithful, cause I'm counting on new beginning.
A reason for living, a deeper meaning, yeah.
Come on.
I wanna stay with you on a mountain.
I wanna bathe with you in the sea. This is fucked up.
Come on.
I wanna lay with you forever.
Until the sky falls down on my knee.
I thought you were going to say on your knees. Well, is it you or me?
No, we're done. It's enough.
Make a wish and... Okay, all right.
You're done.
I'm done. You got me, okay? You happy?
Just wanted you to have enjoy the moment. Jesus.
You've been hoodwinked.
Got to be so serious.
Yes.
Why so serious? All right. Great show.
Oh, boy.
It's and this one, too. Hall of Fame moment here for the four Bills. First time I mentioned it.
Yes, the podcast was good. The show up and down. I thought it had that great Benoit Eddie match. Mm-hmm. Had some good storyline advancements. I don't know if anything outside Benoit Eddie was great, though. Well, the tag title change was cool to see as well.
Right.
So I can't say it's a highly recommended show, but a solid year-ender in a month that sometimes doesn't always have that. So, and a lot happened.
Exactly. And again,
some big title changes.
We're not here to tell you what to watch or what to like or not like. If you love the Three Stages of Hell, you're not sure about it, go to the, if you have the DVD, throw it in. If you have the network, bring up the show and check it out for yourself. Mm-hmm. Maybe we're idiots. Maybe you think that it's 35 great minutes, and it's 35 good
minutes. I
don't
think we're idiots. I mean, unless you just listen to the nonsense we sang, but...
check it out. I definitely recommend checking out Benoit or Eddie. That match is outstanding.
Yep. Yeah. No, I agree with that. So...
Done, my friend.
Well, a few notes here from Steven. Yes. I want to talk about. Now I want to talk about the year as a whole. So here are some end-of-the-year facts.
Okay.
All the people released, 17 total. Mike Awesome, Steve Blackman, Diamond Dallas Page, David Flair, Scott Hall, Kurt Hennig, Jerry Lynn, Ray Rougeau, Perry Saturn, Low Key, Tiger Ali Singh,
Ray Rougeau?
Apparently this is 1992. Meets Godfather, Taka Michinoku, Steve Austin, Billy Silverman, and Haku.
Billy Silverman?
Yes, referee. I think Ray Rougeau is doing the French broadcasting at this point. So,
Papa Shango and Skinner and... Well, obviously, we know Skinner wasn't released in 92 because he's on our Raws. So.
20 people signed with the promotion, and Steven gave me real names because they would go through multiple characters. So Lyle Basham Jr., Rodney Bignode, Eric Bischoff, Mike Bucci, Matt Capitelli, Jacqueline Gaeta, Renee Guggen, John Hennigan, Nathan Jones, Brian Kendrick, Gail Kim, Josh Lomberger, James Maritato, Linda Miles, Ernest Miller, Shannon Moore, Matt Morgan, Melina Perez, Dawn Marie, and Travis Tomko. You may recognize some of those names coming up in the future, but those are all the people that signed over this past calendar year. And Sally Scott, 10 people passed away in 2002. Of course, the great Davey Boy Smith,
mm-hmm.
Wahoo McDaniel,
mm-hmm.
referee Randy Anderson, the big sweeter, Sweet Hansen.
I forgot Randy Anderson died.
Yep.
Wow.
Big Dick Dudley, your boy, Lou Thez, Ted Petty, Mr. Wrestling, the Mighty Igor, and promoter Don Owen.
And nobody knows who Ted Petty is, that's Rocco Rock from Public Enemy. Don Owen, legendary promoter of Portland wrestling, Northwest wrestling. I forgot about Randy Anderson. Wow, that's a bummer.
Yeah.
That sucks.
NWO finally got him.
Yeah. Yes.
So that Davey is Boy. All the people that passed away.
Would that be the toughest? Was that the toughest one of the year?
Yeah. Yeah. I was pretty broken up about Davey Boy back in May. So as we mentioned, Scott, a pretty cool year. A lot's gone on since we last wrapped up a year in 2001. Mm-hmm. We've had a lot of changes. The NWO came and went. Hulk Hogan came and went. Amazingly enough, Steve Austin's gone now. The Rock is gone in Hollywood. We have a whole new crop of stars on top, and it finally feels like the promotion is changing. And as I've mentioned many times, I feel like WrestleMania 19 becomes the final gong on the Attitude Era. To me, this is where it ends, and I believe in April of 2003 is when the new era begins. So, 17 to me has always been the peak of Attitude. 19 is the end of Attitude.
So it's almost like WrestleMania 1 was the start of rock and wrestling. WrestleMania 3 was the peak.
Right.
And WrestleMania 6 was the end.
Right. That was like the new era kicked off with that show. To me, the new era kicks off in 19 where a new main event styles and other people in the mix. And to me, that's where things really start to change into the more modern-ish era. Mm-hmm. And even that era that starts there, I think, is now done. But it's been a really cool year to chronicle. It's one that we looked forward to due to all the crazy change that was upon us.
Yep.
And I think we've seen it. I think it's all played out. I think we now have two brands. We have two separate GMs, and those GMs will last for a bit here throughout 2003. We finally have some stability in the product. We have a little bit of new competition in the mix with TNA and Ring of Honor, and WCW and ECW officially gone. And it was a cool year. I really enjoyed talking about it, and I'll be looking forward in some ways to 2003 just because, we've had a couple years now where we haven't had a lot to really rip into. Like 2002 we did, but I think 2000, 2001 there was so much good stuff going on. Now we're hearkening back to some of the days that we did in these podcasts, like 95, 96, where we had a lot of crap to talk about to help get us through some of these shows. So 03 will be very interesting. Things get very thin very quick as well because they start doing different stuff. So be very interesting. So
yes,
we'll be taking a little bit of a break here, Scott.
Yes.
First time in a while, I think we've taken this much time off. And things, big things may happen, you know. That is because you are setting sail on the high seas.
That's right.
For like the 19th time in the history of the show, someone's going on a cruise.
It seems like it, doesn't it?
Might as well name you Chris. You go on so many cruises. So, yes, you are departing next week. We wish you a fair voyage, as always.
Thank you. Thank you.
I hope you don't get eaten by any sharks or murdered by any pirates.
And pirates, or let's hope the boat doesn't break down and it becomes Lord of the Flies like that other that other ship.
Well, that would be pretty cool if it did.
I would do a podcast live.
I was saying, are we getting a live extra point from the seas with you and Dr. G?
You know, him and I have the Caribbean? We have the drinking package, so which is the all you can drink beer and wine. So
it's better than the game package that you usually like to play.
Shh. Could have done that. Never mind. I seriously doubt we'll be able to. Because the one sports bar on the boat, it's nothing but soccer and cricket and stuff. So
yeah.
I don't know if that'll be. It'll be a relaxing vacay, and then I come back, and then I come to my other paradise.
Now, are you bunking up with an elderly woman? Because you usually do on these things.
Yeah, my mom.
Okay. I'm just saying. You seem to always be...
Well, it's my mom. I mean, we're not talking about like some
your
random...
mom, Heather's mom. There's always some older woman in your room in these things.
But she did say to me that...
she brought McGinn. He needs to go on a booze cruise.
That's true. He does need to... No, then he might meet my mom. No, I don't want to... Stop. I don't even want to go there.
Could be your dad, Dan McGinn.
Just do Ron. Shut up. No, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a good time. And,
be your own little legend's house.
I will return... I will return, and then I go to my other paradise, which is the Sopo.
That's right. You're going to take a boat here?
I'll take the
boat. You should have the cruise pull right up. Dock right up to Black Rock Pond over here.
Yes. The pond, yeah. I'll meet you in Narragansett.
Imagine that fucking cruise ship just pulls up in this pond behind my house.
See, you wish you guys had this, huh? And talk to your neighbors and that single guy that lives across the street or whatever his name is.
Yes.
The guy that waters his lawn at 3 o'clock in the morning. But yeah, so then I return, of course, it'll be St. Mary's weekend, and we take an extended break. So yeah.
So we should mention here that yes, we'll be off. There'll be no PTB now for 3 weeks, Scott. I think it's the longest we've ever gone. It's gonna be kind of weird. So this Wednesday we have episode 13 of the Kevin Kelly Show in the main event. Our guest on Kevin still in the works, still undetermined. Main event. Who you got in the?
We jacked up the whole lineup. We got rid of Jordan Duncan because the National Organization for Women was tired of him slamming divas matches. And we gave Rish a chance to breathe. So our guests, replacing them and joining Ben, Willie, and myself, will be our good friend Mr. Aaron George, who's actually at Raw tonight.
Yes, he is.
So he's going to give us a... And coming back from his second visit to the main event since WrestleMania, that's my good friend Johnny Reckless will be joining us on Wednesday night. So
good crew in the house.
Yep, we'll talk about. We have a fun little game with the roster at the halfway point of at the halfway point of the year that I think everybody will enjoy. So be a good show.
And they'll be off all next week. Mm-hmm. The week after, no show Monday. It's the St. Mary's weekend fallout.
Yeah.
And then that Wednesday will be episode 14 of Kevin Kelly main event. And then on July 28th, Scott, we return. Undecided yet on that show will not be a vault because that Wednesday we're hoping to have Kevin back to wrap up 02.
Yep.
Maybe a pay-per-view card, maybe something else. We're assuming since you're away, CM Punk's going to come back and have an awesome promo.
Cut the promo of a lifetime.
Since that happens whenever you go away. So.
Well, the newest I said that today. The newest WrestleMania Rewind on the network is his two Money in the Bank wins at 24, 25. Right. So, of course, the hints are coming now.
Yes.
So.
You'll be there because you'll be on the seas.
But I won't miss missing
having a fair voyage.
Yes.
missing
the pay-per-view. So.
That's true. So we will see. Also, Scott, you're going to miss... Actually, you here next Saturday? When do you leave?
I leave on Saturday.
Okay. Well, they're doing a Saturday night's main event marathon next Saturday during
yes, I saw that.
Week, yes, so.
It's part of the preview. Yeah.
So you can enjoy your stupid little cruise. I'll be watching Saturday night's main event.
Enjoy that dump Bermuda while I'll be watching Bob Orton and Hulk Hogan. I'll be watching Flower Shops.
That's right, baby.
All right. So we are out. Scott, I'll talk to you in 3 weeks, I guess. I won't see you or talk to you before then. It's going to be like the World of Wrestling where we see each other for Raw and then I don't talk to you. So if you're not here, we're not going to talk ever. So you enjoy your cruise. I'll talk to you on July 28th and not a minute before as soon as we hang up this call. So, all right, Nation. Hope you enjoy this little break from us. I think we've earned it after 322 episodes, so we'll take a few weeks off, but we'll be back Wednesday night under separate auspices. And until then, everyone take care, and Scott, enjoy your cruise, and maybe Lena will treat you on the island of Isle of Man, wherever you're headed.
She's a hell of a plumber.
Yes.
Wherever you are, I believe that the heart does go on.